This is Real Talk, the Customer Insights Show with Jen Vogel, a top-rated live stream and podcast in the market research and insights industry. We stream live on LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube, and you can listen on all major podcast channels. Join Jen and her guests for a weekly discussion around topics that will help you understand your customers better. Real Talk is presented to you by Vox PopMe, the leader in video research and ranked number one in qualitative research by Grit 2 years running. Here's today's conversation.
Hello, insights professionals, marketers, and everyone who wants to understand their customers better. I'm your host, Jen Vogel. We've talked a lot about product-led growth in parts of other previous episodes, and given what a big topic it is, I wanted to discuss it in a bit more depth. To do that, today I'm joined by Wes Bush, CEO at Product Led and author of Product Led Growth, How to Build a Product That Sells Itself. Welcome to the show, Wes.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming. This is such an important topic and, you know, it comes up all the time, as you know. I don't need to tell you that. So I'm excited to dig into it today. Maybe to get us started, I'd just love to hear about how your interest in product-led growth started and what prompted you to write the book.
Yeah, totally. So I feel like I just completely fell into this whole world of product-led growth. It started when I was actually doing demand generation at a couple of B2B SaaS companies. And I was just in charge of getting leads basically for the sales team. And I was promoting white papers, I was promoting guides, and in those guides, it was just like, here's how to do like video marketing strategy or whatever regarding about what this business actually did, which in that case was a video hosting platform. And so it always felt a little bit like a roundabout way of getting people interested in our product. And when we initially launched a free trial, like the first time it bombed. And then the second time we launched a freemium model, it's took off. We had like hundreds of thousands of users. And that was kind of my like, oh, I guess there's a better way to market, a better way to actually sell products, because I kind of looked back at my own experience interacting with other like tech products as well. And I was like, you know what, actually the ones that I love and enjoy using the most, a lot of them have that experience where I can actually test it out if I like it. I can make that purchasing decision without needing to get like approval or anything like that. It's usually like a small purchase to get started, but it could still wind up to be a big purchase over time. So that's my initial foray into this world of actually product-led before it was even called that. But what really got me excited about writing the book on product-led growth was I had been consulting for these B2B SaaS companies and helping them understand like how to turn their users into happy paying customers. And I had been helping enough of them that I started to realize that there's a process. There's a way, if you do specific things, that you'll be able to see, you know, more people signing up for your product, more people actually able to go in, see value, and ultimately purchase. And so the book was really just a way of like, how do I synthesize what's in my head and some of the results I have seen for these other companies and package it in a way that someone could read it in less than 4 hours and get a quick time to value, hopefully when they implement it into their business.
Amazing. You make it sound easy.
It's not.
It's not as easy as it sounds, but yeah. I think it's so interesting that, you know, sort of the more we are connected and the more technology that brings us together, the actually less we want to talk to each other. Just want to do stuff ourselves. And, you know, like you were saying, the products that I have the most success with are ones where I can just get in and play around myself. And I don't really necessarily want somebody to show me what to do or sell it to me. For sure. And so having that kind of that choice of how people want to buy is really, you know, is really important. And in your book, you talk about designing your product-led growth strategy. How does that look? And, you know, where do companies start?
Totally. So when it comes to designing your product-led strategy, I always just start with like, who are you going to design this with? Because PLG is extremely cross collaborative. Where I see a lot of companies make mistakes in developing their product-led strategy, just it's like, oh, okay, it's the CEO or it's the founder, or maybe it's the VP of product, or they're like, okay, we're going to do this product-led thing. Here's my strategy. And they just kind of go and implement it. It's like, okay, it's bound to fail because you need to have every single department a part of this. You need to find who are those key leaders they can go in and actually build this out with those people. But then it's also a matter of thinking about, okay, how are you actually going to figure this out? What are the big key differences? And so there is the second part of this is just, how do we get everyone on the same page around like, what is product-led for our specific business? And where I find, like obviously I can go like deep into like how to build a product-led strategy, but the one kind of big shift that I think your audience would really benefit from is you've got to get everyone on the same page about what are some of those big shifts you need to make as a business. And what I always love saying is like the fundamentals of business have not changed, even with this whole product-led growth thing that's coming up again and again. Companies still need to acquire people. They need to monetize them. They got to make money. They also need to engage them when they get into product, make sure they have a good experience and eventually retain them. And then the last part is they really have to expand the customer value. And so those four key pillars, acquisition, monetization, engagement, expansion, have not changed. What has changed and the one big shift you need to make as a business is if you're going to make this kind of jump from more of a sales-led business to something more product-led, you need to think about, okay, what are we going to prioritize first? What are we going to move up the ladder? And what often happens is you got to realize that it starts with acquisition. You still got to get people to find out about your company. But the next step is, how do we engage them? How do we actually help them really see the value of the product? And then we can monetize them and then expand them. So that's like the high level kind of like big shift from a strategy perspective that you do need to make as a team. So I just wanted to kind of share that because I think it's easy to gloss it over. Like there's so many big changes, but it really is just this one big change.
For sure. Yeah. And it is, like you said, like sort of iterative over time. You know, this is the thing you need to do first, knowing that there's 7,000 other things that are going to happen after, but like it is about prioritizing. And a lot of what you said, I think like we can really dig into. I mean, first of all, getting everybody on the same page about what you're doing and why you're doing it, but also just what does product-led growth mean? Yeah. To each individual, you know, I think we've had these conversations internally at VoxPopMe about what does product-led growth mean for us? And, you know, finance has a different definition than maybe engineers do, than marketing, than sales, and really aligning everyone is maybe a step that's overlooked. I wouldn't say it's hard. It just requires conversation and collaboration, but probably an easy one to just move on and just assume everybody knows what product-led growth is, right? All you have to do is Google, and there's plenty of information out there. There's great books out there. But actually, it's people do kind of have a lot of different understandings of what it means.
Yeah. And I think depending on how it's introduced, like there could be a lot of fear around it. Like I might also be part of the problem here, even with the subtitle of the book. It's like how to build a product that sells itself. And it's like, well, okay, let's take that at face value. So your product can sell itself. If you're just like, okay, we're going to introduce product that grows so we can create a product that sells itself, people in sales are going to be like, I'm going to sabotage this because I want my job. But what I really kind of even meant with product that grows, how to build a product that sells itself, is it's like, you know what? When people go into your product and let's say we're able to give them an amazing experience, they're able to see the value of the product and we make it actually very easy for them to upgrade without talking to anyone. In a way, the product has sold itself. And what actually happens for sales and a lot of leaders in this capacity is it's like, okay, that salesperson who is now, or they used to talk to every single person, even small, medium-sized businesses, now they get to actually focus on the bigger, more exciting kind of enterprise prospects and clients where they can provide a lot more value. They actually, the product sells all of those small kind of medium-sized businesses as well in a large way. So yeah, I think like tackling some of those myths as well is super important as part of like building that initial product-led strategy.
Yes, I can definitely relate to that. There is a lot of fear that comes with it. But I think you've touched on something really important, which is that, you know, really defining, sorry, I don't know if you can hear my dog. He's going crazy. It's been a while since he made an appearance on the show. So welcome back to the show, to my dog. Oh, goodness. Anyways, perfect timing. You know, really defining the ideal customer for your upmarket enterprise business and how your sort of freemium product-led customer might differ is actually a really important piece to kind of eliminating that fear and really saying like, hey, this is going to free you up to focus on those big opportunities because this, if they fall into this category, you now have a different place to put them and really sort of understanding who that customer is, ideal customer for the different lines of business can help to redirect those efforts.
For sure.
Let's see. What do you think is the role of understanding your product's value to make this work? Like, how do you suggest companies go about kind of like defining their value, communicating it with customers in a way that does help it to sell itself?
Totally. This is like, honestly, one of the biggest pieces, like, especially if you're going to like create a product that can eventually like sell itself in that capacity. But what actually comes first, you touch on it too, is like, get crystal clear on who you're serving. If you're a sales-led business where like the only way someone can purchase a product on your website is if they'd like talk to sales, I'll label you as sales-led, that's fine. But if you're making this switch, or even if you are product-led, it all starts with understanding like, who is our ideal user? Who gets the most value from our specific product? Get crystal clear on that specific person. Who is it? What do they look like? What are some of the typical characteristics of that person and the companies potentially they work for? So get like crystal clear on that part. And then the second part is like really just work on your brand promise. Like, what is that big promise we're going to be making to this user? And the distinction, if you're a sales that is like, okay, we had been talking to, let's say the C-suite level, like anyone who's a decision maker, you're usually targeting as a sales-led business. But in a product-led business, you might not actually care that much to even target that person. You might say, you know what, if we're selling video hosting software, yes, the VP of demand gen is going to purchase this. But it might also start with someone in sales, oddly enough, who just needs to send a video to a prospect and like they start using the free tool and then it starts expanding. So you got to get crystal clear on one, who is that specific user? Two, what is that specific promise? And then the next part is what we usually do is kind of break down that promise into bite-sized pieces. And I call these like different problem sets. So you have like your beginner problem set, and then your intermediate problem set and advanced problem set. And you really just got to think about, okay, for these different problem sets of someone who is going to eventually experience this promise, those beginner problems are really what we want to give away for free. So in Vidyard's case, okay, yeah, your big promise is to like get everyone to start communicating better with video so you can close more sales and all that stuff. So it's like, okay, that's our big brand promise. And then the beginner problem might just be like, I want to send a video to a prospect. Great. How do I make that easy? And that's actually the freemium product today. So just thinking about that promise, and then it gives you that clarity on like, okay, all those other pieces. What do we give away for free? What do we upgrade? You start upgrading people on some of those intermediate problems. And it can become, it sounds simple, but obviously figuring that out all comes back to just understanding the customer as well as you can. And that is why I'm so happy to talk with you about this, because it's like customer research is like, if you don't have this kind of skill set internally, it's just you're playing this game on hard mode.
Totally. I love how you describe that, playing the game on hard mode. We had a conversation very early on this show 2 years ago, probably, with Gia Loudy, who is a dear yes. friend of mine. And, you know, she and Claire Swellentrop have really coined the term of customer-led growth, which is about exactly what you're talking about. Like, totally. Ultimately, what you're trying to build is a product that sells itself, but with customer insight and customer understanding as step one. And I think that that's a, you know, that is a way to not play the game on hard mode. Like, really speaking, like not just understanding the value of your product, but how it aligns to the problems that you're solving for your ideal customer. Like that's the sweet spot is, you know, really making those connections for people. And also, I mean, like, again, like you, when you talk about it, you make it sound easy. I mean, I know this was like a several year kind of process for you and not something that just can be turned on overnight. And it does require a lot of work and like commitment to not give up before the miracle, really. Because there's a lot that goes on and it takes a while to make that shift from enterprise to a more freemium model. And actually, I think, you know, it's not that common. It's a lot more common that companies sort of go the other way, maybe launch as a product-led organization and expand into more sort of enterprise deals over time. It's really hard for larger organizations to build in these lower entry point or freemium models.
For sure. There is ways to like do it that doesn't rock the ship too much. I find like where it typically doesn't work that well is like, okay, let's slap on this like free trial to this already like hectic enterprise products that's hard to get to value. And that's actually I didn't touch on it, but like one of the first reasons why at Vidyard, like our free trial just didn't work. And it's because like we had this intermediate problem set that we were solving at that point. And it was basically you would sign up for the free trial, you had 14 days. To see value in the product, you had to upload a video. You had to put that video on your marketing site. You had to obviously have some good traffic to that site to see who is like the amount of people watching it kind of thing. And what percentage of the video did they watch? But then if you really wanted to get good value, you would have to connect your marketing automation platform. And then you could see like, who is Jen watching my video? And that was actually the real aha, because it's like YouTube kind of had that part too of like, okay, what percentage of people watch the video? But like the big aha was like, it took a long time to get to that. And so where I see a lot of these big companies kind of make mistakes is like, they don't think about, well, what are the problems people have before that? In our case, it was like, people just don't know how to create a video. Like that's actually pretty tough. But like, if we could create a Chrome extension in a couple clicks, someone could like record the screen. Let's start there. Let's make it easy. And so that was actually like it had a much faster time to value. And when you solve that beginner problem set, that's really where you can start to open up capabilities. And for bigger companies who might even be contemplating this, it most likely will be it's a different product, which is opens up a whole nother can of worms that most companies probably don't want to open just yet.
Totally. Yeah. yeah. Like building a different product that is ultimately based on the same sort of fundamental foundation of what your product is. There's a lot to, again, it goes back to the priorities like you talked about before, like where do you start? How do you, you know, let's say you've built this new product and you're solving that beginner problem. How do you ensure that the product is actually leading to growth? Like how do you measure the success of that?
Yeah. So the like main kind of thing you would want to start measuring right away is just like how many or like what percentage of people who sign up for this product are actually getting to value. And there's a lot of different terms around there. Even internally, a product that we call it like user success, there's like your initial aha moment, your beginner milestone. And then there's like, okay, product qualified lead. So like there's so many different ways of how you describe the same thing. But that part doesn't matter. What really matters is thinking about, okay, what would be that meaningful win for someone whenever they get into your product? So in Vidyard's case, that was like, okay, you sign up for the free product and then you record your video and it's easy. So that's like, you know, slight win. But what's really a win is when someone watches it and you're able to see, oh, you know, Jen watched 98% of my video. Like, that's really cool. I'm going to start sending more videos because maybe your response to it was like, if this was a new kind of tool, it's like, wow, this is so cool. Way better than a message. So that's really just trying to dissect for everyone's product. Like, what does that look like? It might not be as easy to kind of come up with like, oh, it's just this right away. But what I would recommend for a lot of companies who aren't clear on it is just start with, this is where you use your gut brain. Mm-hmm. Just start with what you think is best. Start measuring it and see if it has an indicator on, like, if more people do this thing in our product and see value, do we see like a big increase in those people who are actually upgrading? If you do, then you're most likely on the right track. You're going to say, okay, maybe we're a little off, let's tweak it a bit, but you will always see a high correlation between people who experience the value and actually become customers. And the whole secret I always tell people around product-led growth, and my famous one-liner is, like, your user success will eventually become your success. So just measure the user success and the rest will take care of itself.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, it goes back to centering it around the customer. You know, if you deliver value, I mean, and this isn't even related to product-led growth, just across the board, if you are a company creating services or products, if you focus on creating value, then the revenue, the business metrics will come, right? Sure. And I think, like, what you're talking about, like, there's so much data, and figuring out, that's the hard part. It's not actually the measurement that's hard. There's plenty of things that we can measure and a lot of different ways that we can measure them. It's figuring out the one thing, the one metric that really matters, you know, looking at the conversion rate from X to Y or the usage of these types of features or the time in the platform. You know, there is, like you mentioned, there's something that's going to correlate with likelihood to convert or revenue achievement, but it's not all the data points that you could possibly measure. So it's almost like you kind of have to start pulling in all the data and just say, well, this actually seems to be the indicator. Or like you said, like, trust your gut and make a hypothesis of, we think that if people do X, it will lead to Y, and then validate that. But it's like kind of a constant cycle. Like, it's when I think about how we think about, like, customer insights or, you know, looking at data, behavioral data, like, it's not something you could just do once and then rely on that forever. It's just constantly being iterated, I guess.
Totally. Yeah. And like, the first time you most likely won't get it right. Like, one of our product-led coaches who teaches our program, they work at Softr, and Softr basically allows you to turn, like, your Airtable or Google Sheets, like, whatever data you have in there, you can, like, create a website with it, which is kind of cool. So, like, for databases and stuff, it's really easy to, like, whip up an app. And so they had the hypothesis where it's like, you know what, it's when people connect Airtable with our platform, that's going to be the win for the user. And they start measuring, like, okay, yeah, there's a correlation here, but, like, is that really what it is? And it was like just one step off. It was like, actually, it's when they see whatever they had in Airtable, that database, and then boom, they were able to look at their creation in Softr and be like, oh my goodness, I can kind of see this kind of being a website. It's not perfect, but I get the feel for it. I get, like, 80% of the way there already. Wow. Okay. So, like, that was the real win. And so it's like, sometimes it's just moving a bit further down of, like, okay, what would be something that people would actually refer to their friends and be like, hey, look at this. Well, look what I did. That's usually when you're on the right track. If something, people are creating something within your tool.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, how much of that do you kind of just measure with behavior and kind of watching what people do? And how much time do you spend actually talking to customers and hearing their experience or watching them experience the platform? Really? You know, how much time do you spend sort of one-on-one with customers?
So this is one of those questions where it's always like, it depends on your role and everything else like that. I wish there was, like, a broad stroke. It should be like 20 hours a week. It should definitely be more than you think usually for the customer research side of things. But, like, how you would do it, a lot of times you can, like, whether it's using one of the V1 product analytics for a lot of software companies, is just looking at user recordings. So, like, okay, you can set up events to kind of monitor, okay, the people who are successful, like, what did they do differently? And what you often kind of find and learn is, like, they did something different. Maybe they like skipped a couple steps or something, or they're just, they did something else and they got to it much faster than other people. So you can start to learn from those people and be like, okay, maybe actually we should like cut out these steps in our onboarding and just get people to this point faster. So there's like one side of just like looking at what people are doing. That's definitely a bit more reactive for sure. There's also when people sign up, really just asking them like, what are you hoping to accomplish? If you don't have like your jobs be done kind of nailed, this is probably one of the best questions to ask. Or like, what was going on in your life that like brought you to actually sign up for our trial? And you'll start seeing some really, really incredible insights around like, well, I was struggling with X and I found the solution to do Y. It's like, this is literally like, okay, yeah, once you get like a good sample size of this, what you can start doing is, okay, narrow it down to like maybe three or four of these common use cases. And then it's like, oh, you wanted to do customer research with your ICP or something like that. It's like, okay, great. Like, boom, go to that part of the product. Ignore 98% of the rest of the product. We just want to help you with that section. So that's one of the other parts. And of course, like customer research interviews are amazing when you're really just trying to define like, okay, here is what it is that our product does and how we can get better clarity on that. And also, why are people not engaging with this product? So it's really at the end of the day, it's just a mixture of like, what are some of those biggest areas? But it really depends on like, what is the problem you're facing in your business? Is it like, you just don't know how to do the product-led thing? Or is it, you know what, there's big churn. And that's obviously a big problem. You're going to talk to different people for each of those.
That's such a good point. You do need to really ask different questions to different people at different stages of the journey. So the person, like you said, that just signed up, hey, why'd you sign up? Or what are you trying to do? Or, you know, the person who just converted to a paid user, you know, oh, glad you had such a great free trial. You know, what was it that got, you know, I love that question. Tell me about the moment you knew that this is going to solve your problem, right? Such a powerful one. But yeah, it's like you need to understand different things from different people at different stages. And so there's a good blend of the quantitative data and understanding who these people are and where they are in their journey, and then layering on some of the more human questions that are more open-ended to really dig in and understand what problems you're solving for them, then go back to defining the value like we talked about in the beginning, right? And layer that in.
For sure.
So what, how do you, now thinking, I mean, we've talked about sort of building the product, like how do you think about product improvements along the way and making sure that they're ultimately the right ones to drive the outcomes that you're looking for?
Yeah, so I think even similar to like the previous question too, like if you don't have a good understanding of like, okay, what are the steps someone will need to take within your product to see value, as well as like which, where's the drop off between them and actually upgrading, and having that on like some sort of dashboard where you can see like, okay, this is the general like flow of the business. That's like step one in all this, because it's going to direct your energy of like, oh, actually, if we focused here, this is where majority of people are getting stuck. So that's the first step. And I think for the second part of the question, you were wondering is where to focus more of the research part, or was it something else?
Yeah, I think it's just more like making sure, like, how are we thinking about validating the work that you're doing along the way, right? Because even like you said about the trial, or like figuring out what metrics to measure, you might get it wrong at first. So there's constantly improvements. And, you know, I mean, I guess just to go down a side rabbit hole a bit, like, one of the big benefits of kind of going down market and having a lower entry point or a freemium model is just like expanding the potential for the number of users. And you can learn so much from just having a much larger user base than you could with a very expensive or a very, you know, kind of tough to onboard or high touch product. And so it allows for a lot more testing, a lot more iteration, a lot more product development to happen, even just small things like language within your platform or anything like that. And so, but ultimately there's some sort of objective that you're trying to hit. And, you know, how do you make sure like any of these iterations and experiments and changes that are being made in the platform are helping you to achieve those goals, really?
Right. Yeah. Okay. So for like how to validate where you want to focus on specific parts. Yeah. Like one part's getting the right metrics and then also like validating your learnings of like what is working, what's not. What we recommend doing is just really setting up the right mentality internally in your business around like building a culture of experimentation, being okay, like, you know what, majority of these tests are actually going to fail and that's okay. There is no such thing as failure. There's just learnings. And our goal is to make them as inexpensive as possible as a business so that we can take more swings for the bigger ones. So what we recommend doing is like, okay, if you have a hypothesis around something, really just kind of looking at it from a few different variables. Like one, like what is the upside of this? So a lot of people like think about like impacts, like the old ICE score. And it's mm-hmm. like, yeah, okay, that's fine. But like, what's never considered usually is like, what's the downside? What would happen if this, like, we think this good idea is good and it's actually like, it's toxic or something like that. And so like, let's weigh the downside of this one as well. And then there still is like, okay, how easy would this be to really like implement and roll out in our business? And then the last part is really just like, how confident are we, you know, like one is like, I have this good idea. And then like we, even at Product Led, we have like every single number is like, if it's a three, it's someone you've actually gone through, had done like research on this. If it's a four, like you have like compelling market data. If it's a five, you've done customer research to like validate this idea. And I think a lot of times when people are like scoring some of these potential tests and ideas, it's like, you don't think enough about like, well, what work did you actually put in to get this number? Did you just like pull it out of the wazoo or did you have like the data to really make this decision? And we should really prioritize the ones where it's like, there has been some rigor as far as that goes. And that's really where you bring in that customer research to find out, okay, like how can we validate some of these high risk kind of bets to get better at validating and focusing on the right areas of the business.
Yeah. I think being data driven like is like so well connected with what you've said about like experimentation and failure and like, you know, that it gives you more freedom to do that because you have the right metrics in place and the right mindset. I think that's important too, what you said about the culture of experimentation, you know, that no company is going to succeed here if you have a sort of like, this is how we do things kind of approach, right? It's got to be like a, let's see, you know, who knows? Let's try it and find out and all agree what success look like, right? So that alignment is really key. And I think it goes back to what you said earlier about, you know, it can't just come from one division of the company, right? Mm-hmm. It really has to be an like organization-wide strategy that everybody's bought into in order to for it to be successful. And, you know, also like, you know, the thing I want to ask is about like what companies could can benefit from this approach and which ones maybe should stay away from it. I think just going back to what we were saying before, like it's really difficult to go from that enterprise to product-led strategy. And I think Vidyard very famously did that well, but it's the exception. There's not a lot of companies who have been successful in the way that, that Vidyard has in going in that direction. So yeah, I mean, is this a strategy every company should consider or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I fully believe like every company can be product led. Every time I say like, you know what, this industry can't do it, I'm like, wait a minute. For instance, like just a couple of weeks ago, I was going through, I was picking up a burrito. My favorite like food is burrito. So now everyone knows, but like right beside it, there was like this Indian place and they had a free trial for like some dish that there was a new one for them. I'm like, oh, this is like hilarious. Taking a photo, the business owner is like, is there a problem? I was like, no, I love this because I'm obsessed with free trials. And like, it can't be any industry. So is it really like possible for every single one. I can definitely think of examples like military equipment, all that stuff, where it's like, oh yeah, we probably don't want to give it that away for a free trial kind of thing. But so when we think about like for business, there's a couple of factors you definitely do want to consider for your business. Like if you're a startup or something like that, and you're not like product market fit yet, please don't just try to like automate the crap out of your funnel right away, because it's like, you do really need to talk to people at that early stage, especially to understand like, what are those key problems, pain points that we can really help people? Like, are we truly solving a problem or not? So that's like, if you're early stage company, focus on that. And if you do have to talk to customers, like as much as possible, even if there's no way to like automate the sign up experience, that's completely fine. Get that product market fit first before you start thinking about the scale for your go-to-market strategy. Two, if you're thinking about like, should we be product led? You really need to have your leadership team aligned on this. I have seen so many of those examples you were talking about of like, okay, this like, you know, sales led company tried to be product led. It's like one person really wanted it. There was a couple passive people, and then like there was three of them that didn't. And it's like, okay, I've seen this too many times where it's like, that just never works. You need to get everyone on the same page about why this is going to be the right fit. And then on that second stage, is you need to have a scaled approach, especially if you're a bigger company. You need to have something where it's like, you're thinking about this as like a test. And this is where I see a lot of culture difference between like a sales-led business and a product-led business. Like a product-led business typically moves at a much faster velocity for learning and experimentation. They're always trying new things. And that's part of the thing where it's like, they look at these new initiatives and things like tests. And the maybe sales of business that moves a bit slower, they have their standard processes of how they do things. They typically will move a lot slower and look at some of these things as failures when it's like, well, that first attempt at a free trial, that wasn't actually, a catastrophe. But what was the learning here? Did we actually help users solve a meaningful problem in their realm or not? And so I think just kind of taking consideration of those three factors of like, do we have product market fit? Is our leadership team bought in? And then can we take a scaled approach to attempting this and really solve some of those beginner problems first?
Yeah, I love that. I love the, you know, slower really doesn't mean failure, basically. This is a long-term strategy, a long-term vision. And any business who's really kind of short-term focused and looking at like, you know, oh, are we going to hit our numbers this month? Yes. You know, maybe product-led growth isn't the right approach, because it takes time, right? It takes commitment. I think it's really interesting too, what you said about sort of early stage startup, figuring out product market fit. Maybe you actually need to be talking to people more than automating, which is so interesting. And we had a conversation with April Dunford about positioning on the show. And that was one of the things that she said actually was like, how do you validate that your positioning is like really sticking with people? And she said, it's in the sales conversations. It's not in the research necessarily, but like the head nodding when you're on, it's an enterprise sales presentation and sort of testing out that messaging. And so that's a really, you know, I tend to think, because we have the experience of trying to go sales led to product led, and we're still in the middle of our journey and it's been a lot of fun. But, you know, I tend to look at companies who are sort of entering the PLG space from day one and thinking they've got it much easier, right?
Totally.
But maybe not necessarily so. I mean, we do have the benefit of talking to customers on a regular basis.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, this has been a great conversation. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show today. Can you tell our listeners where they can find your book?
Yes, absolutely. So we eat our own dog food here at Product Led. And so the book itself, if you're interested in Product Led Growth, it's completely free. So it's also ungated. So if you go to productledbook.com, you'll be able to get a free copy of it and just go through the book on your own. No weird shipping payments. It's just free.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
No worries.
Thanks everyone for listening in. Next week, we're talking to Corinne Pepin of 2CV. We'll see you then.
Thank you.